Last year we did a portrait of an Egyptian musician, Halim Eldab, who is on the faculty at Kent State University, and not long after we got a call from one of his colleagues who said, "There's another guy here you should talk with." So we did, and he was right. Man, there's a lot of interesting people in the middle of Ohio. This is Phong Nguyen.
Phong Nguyen grew up in a peasant family in the Mekong Delta. His life has taken him to Saigon, to Paris, now the U.S., and back to Vietnam. He's recognized as a foremost authority on Vietnamese traditional music, and he's a musician. I talked to him before a concert in Davis, California.
It's not easy for me to tell about my life. I experience my life, but talking about myself is something that I'm not used to. I was born in the countryside of southern Vietnam, what we call Mekong Delta, the Delta of the Nine Dragons. So I was born in that area into a family of farmers and musicians. Raised in such a farming family, I began to know about how life was difficult, working under the sunlight every day, hard work, using water buffalo to plow the fields. And I saw my parents who worked so hard there during their time. But at night, in the evening, they play music. People used to get together with my father and my uncles to play music in front of the house. So music and work were combined together. I don't know exactly when I did music, but my mother, one time she told me that I began to sing when I could speak. I could sing long songs at the age of 5. And then the war came. We tried to escape from bombing, from shelling, but we kept playing music. Music for ourselves, to entertain ourselves at the end of the day, or music to say goodbye, to say farewell to those who were killed in the war. First, to share the sorrow of the people who have their family members who were killed or lost in their lives during the war. But also, for us, it is kind of celebration that life is still here. It was not the end of the world. I think that Vietnamese were so much experienced with many kinds of wars in the country. And they tend to forget about destruction, about the atrocity in their life. They are very positive people, and I am like that too. Unless you ask me a question and want to revive my memories, I think that in that case, I begin to think of my father's house was destroyed so many times. And the houses were built and destroyed, and we rebuilt the house. Musical instruments were destroyed, string instruments, percussion instruments, they were broken, and the skin was torn apart, and sometimes people have to bury musical instruments in the mud to escape from the war. When you go and put it in a box or a trunk and bury it in the mud. But try to remember coming back to that place to pick up the instruments. We need to have a kind of music in our life, so we kept doing that again and again. Only one thing could not be lost easily is our voice. I could sing again and again in many songs. And most of the songs are about peace, about love, about the beauty of the countryside of Vietnam. So peaceful. Seeing a farmer standing on a plow, behind a water buffalo. That kind of image lasted me for a long time. Water is part of my life. And I feel like water plays a very important role in my life, because the quality of water shows you that our heart must be flexible as water, could be adapted to any situation. The river flows into a small place or a larger place, small river, a canal, an ocean. It could take different shapes. And when you hit the water, water is not destroyed easily. But after you take your hand, your fist out of the water gets back to the same beautiful surface, shining, reflecting the sunlight, reflecting the moon, the stars, so that now we are in Davis, California. I feel like I'm part of this country. I'm part of this community. I don't feel strange to that, because I am water.
So how do you get from a peasant village in the Mekong Delta to being presented a National Heritage Award by the U.S. President? In his case, you might chalk it up to engine failure.
There's a Buddhist monk who happened to be in my village because his boat, the motor boat, failed. And he knew that in that village there's somebody who could sing Buddhist chant. And he sometimes wanted that person to join him in some Buddhist ceremonies in chanting. And it was my grandfather. My grandfather welcomed him and his group to his house in the village and said, "You can stay here with us even overnight, a couple of days, and waiting for the motor boat to be repaired." And during that time, the Buddhist master saw me running around there like kids in the house, and he asked me if I could sing. My grandfather was proudly said, "Oh, sure, he has a very good voice. Very good voice." So I said, "Sing for me a little bit and see if you are good." And I began to sing for him. And he said that this boy has a good voice, so I must adopt him. Let him live in my temple. I will take care of him. And my grandfather still wondered if that was the right choice for me. He asked me, "Would you like to live in a Buddhist temple where people eat only vegetarian?" But I said, "No problem, I could eat any kind of food." And he also, my grandfather said that you also need to be disciplined. As you get up and go to bed at the time that people want you to do, you cannot do whatever you like. Would you like to do that? I said, I didn't know how the things would like there, but I know that there's chanting and in a temple that I love that kind of sounds in my ear. To me, it's so peaceful, so nice. So I don't mind about discipline. I like to hear that kind of singing. So finally, my grandfather discussed with my father, and they let us go to stay in that temple. In order to go to school in the town. In that temple, there are good musicians, the best known musician in the whole Mekong Delta area worked with that temple. And he taught me so many, many songs and pieces of music in the great repertory of music in all South Vietnam.
As the war intensified, he came to Saigon to study and then to teach.
But I came back to the village to visit my parents from time to time. And it seems like most of the time when I visited my family in the countryside, there was something like bombing, shelling, or shooting, and destruction of the village and houses, and trees and flowers gone, and the river was damaged, the river banks were damaged and things. Yeah, so I became involved in peace movement in Vietnam at that time, late 60s, early 70s. We try not to say it was anti-war songs because people didn't like us to oppose the war. And especially if you live in Saigon at that time, anything you said against the policy of the government to make this war, you could be jailed. So we said, we sing to ask for peace of the country. I don't mean that I hate you, but I just wanted to say that peace is good for life. So we sang peace songs. Of course, during our demonstrations in Saigon, the street of Saigon, we got tear gas, we were bitten, we ran away here and there, and we composed songs, and we keep doing that, gather at another place, doing another protest. We, at that time, tried to help the morale of the people at that time about believing in yourself, you won't die. Don't be afraid to know the reality. You know, bomb attacks was terrible, terrible. Destruction was so enormous to the country. So that's why I got people together, especially my students at the time, to sing the songs about the love of the country that encouraged them to believe that they could survive. Regardless of all, in one way or another, you or the Vietnamese people won't die.
His work took him to Japan, and then the war ended. He moved to France, and then in 1983, he was invited to perform and lecture in the United States, becoming a professor at Kent State University.
And because of that, when people play the music, same way like they speak Vietnamese language, they need to bend the tone to put it in a very easy to understand language. Bend the tone. On one fret. So one fret, you can get many tones. So when I play, you need to do that kind of bending tone. You don't need, right? When you play music, just play the notes. Don't bend the tone. Vietnamese said, no, you need to bend the tone because if not, people don't like it. This music is not beautiful. It's not well decorated. It's not well embellished.
Finally, in 1991, he returned to Vietnam to see his parents, his brother and sister. He was invited to lecture at the conservatory in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon, and since has done extensive field work in all parts of the country.
So in 1993, when my plane was approaching Hanoi, my heart beat so strongly. And I saw from the plane the Red River, Trong Hom. And I could not hold my tears, because I saw on TV during the war, the US bombings of the North, seeing from sky view of destruction in the Sông Hồng or Red River area. Now I'm looking from the airplane through the windows. My heart felt like a squeeze. It was like a conflict of my feelings. Whether it's true that I would be here, or how can I forget the things that I saw on TV during the bombing of North Vietnam. I asked myself if this is real or not. I could be in this area. So I could not hold my tears during that time before landing. I met with the old singers. They sang for us folk songs. They never mentioned a word about the war. They never mentioned about the destruction or the loss caused by the war. They never mentioned about any hate with the Americans there. Because in them, I feel like they're quite positive about life. More than thinking of the past, thinking of hatred, revenge, killing or doing something that would do good for the people who were killed in the war. Music of the gong is essential to the life of the people in the Central Highlands. They say that gongs are their blood. Without gongs, they cannot live in this world. And because of that, recently there's some kind of trade with people who go to Central Highlands and try to buy the gongs and sell to foreign countries without being acknowledged by the chief of the village. And they later discover that, oh, there's some important gongs in our village which has been purchased secretly by foreigners or traders. Business people who came to the Central Highlands and bought gongs to sell to America or other countries in Europe.
I ask myself whether people in this world understand the value of music in their life. Music is true part of our life. And I wish that that part would enhance peace to the world. Because you listen to Vietnamese music, you don't feel like kind of rush or then kind of violence in it. Music is peace. Music is not for war. Music is not about killing or for killing. That is what I would like. And I myself experienced that greatly, and it is always true with me that music would bring peace to the world.
Each string sounds like one gong. So you can hear the different sounds of the gong in one bamboo tube. But this instrument is half American because of the gourd. My gourd from Vietnam was broken, so I had to use the Ohio gourd.
In Davis, California, we were talking with Phong Nguyen. The music was from his ensemble's CD, Song of the Banyan, Folk Music of Vietnam. And check him out at phongnguyen.com. That's phongnguyen.com. And our great thanks to David Badagnani for arranging this interview.
Next month, we move from realities to fictions about truth. Three audio dramas. An older couple copes with their daughter's unconventional lifestyle. A Cub Scout's brush with the confusions of death. And Alice falls down the rabbit hole at the age of 44, right after the evening news.
If you want to hear more Hitchhiking Right Away, visit our website where all of our past shows are archived for free listening anytime. And check out our story contest, our web blog of current news, and our gift shop. We've got unforgettable CDs from the show that you can buy as perfect gifts for your one-of-a-kind friends. That's at www.hitching.org.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye, written and hosted by Bishop and Fuller, music by Elizabeth Fuller, unless otherwise indicated. Thanks to webmaster Eli Bishop, to Lou Judson for web audio, Colleen Burrows for transcriptions, Joan White for office assistance.
And welcome to our new stations, KUCA of Conway, Arkansas, KUAC of Fairbanks, Alaska, and KTNA, Talkeetna, Alaska.
The Independent Eye is supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Hitchhikers Guild. Join in support at www.hitching.org. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Peace and joy. And in closing, there was a book we mentioned, and this is from Philippe Petit's narrative, To Reach the Clouds, His Walk Between the World Trade Towers.
I lift the balancing pole. I jounce it, maneuver it between my fingers to find its center, as I do before each of my performances. I approach the edge, I step over the beam. I place my left foot on the steel rope. The weight of my body rests on my right leg, anchored to the flank of the building. I still belong to the material world. My eyes catch what rises in front of me, the top of the North Tower. 60 meters of wire rope. which rolls on itself, which sways, which sags, which vibrates. An inner howl assails me, the wild longing to flee. But it is too late. The wire is ready. Decisively, my other foot sets itself onto the cable.